Welcome to another episode of FGM Stories, a podcast that aims to share the experiences of survivors of female genital mutilation and also relate on-site experiences of field advocates who are working daily to ensure that the practice of female genital mutilation is completely eradicated in our generation. From our last episode, a couple of feedbacks came in, and I really want to say thank you to our listeners who deemed it fit to send us their feedbacks and experiences. It means so much motivation to us at FGM Stories. We'll get to take a listen to one of the listeners who sent in a bit of her experience as someone who has gone through FGM.
So as a woman asked me, did it ever happen? She said, yes, it did. She wasn't around. It wasn't like they seek her consent. So it was after everything that my cousin's grandma came around. And she had to, that's the maternal grandma, she had to enlighten my grandma that people don't do that again. People don't circumcise a female child again and everything. So I was like, really? So you guys did this and you left me to actually figure it out. Like, what is really, really going on with me? Battling with the whole of things, at some point I have to start treating some sort of reactions, or because that place is being exposed. It wasn't as serious as Shola's own, but really, when you actually go through that part, you can see the changes. But I really feel at this point we should try our possible best to enlighten those grandmas, because now they are doing it without even seeking the mother's consent, which is basically what they do most times. They don't seek the mother's consent and they just go ahead with it, and you leave the child battling with one change or the other, trying to figure out what is really, really going on with. I have a lot of friends that are not even bold enough to tell their friends what they are going through. You'll see them, they don't want to expose their body, not because they have one, what will I call it? Not because they are disabled in any part or they have one irregular growth or anything. It's just that part that they don't want people to see. And I don't know, grandmothers are still doing it, and so mothers are still into it, and most of them don't have access to the internet. So if there's anything they can actually do to go to their level and enlighten them, I'm just saying, if there's anything they can do, I'm up and down for it. Thank you. God bless you.
Okay, welcome back. While we have more feedbacks in the locker to share with you in subsequent episodes, on this episode, you will get to hear from an advocate who has been at the forefront of leading campaigns against the practice of FGM in Osun State, Nigeria. I have with me on this episode Mr. Ademola Adebisi, the Executive Director of Value Orientation for Community Enhancement, BAS Nigeria. And he's going to be sharing with us his experience advocating against FGM and also leading the team here in Osun State on advocacy and campaign programs against female genital mutilation. Welcome to this episode, Mr. Ademola.
Thank you, Ratosimbo. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on this episode. So let's get straight to business. You are a male, yeah. Why are you advocating against female genital mutilation?
Because nobody is safe until all are safe. So if the girl is not safe, the guys are not safe.
If the girl is not safe, the guy are not safe. So it looks like the effects of FGM will definitely come to haunt everybody, whether you are involved or not.
Very well.
Okay, so you have been running advocacies and campaigns against FGM for how many years? Can you give a breakdown of how many years you've been running the campaigns?
Okay, precisely 6 years. From 2015, I've been on the field.
Wow, that's been a very long period. So can you share with us some of the highlights of your work? How long you've been working? You told us 6 years. So can you share some highlights, how it has been working to end FGM, how the field has been, how easy or not it has been advocating against FGM?
Okay, it has been easy and it hasn't as well, because is mixed, full of mixed feelings when it comes to. I've had privilege to work in the three states that the UNJP is working, is focusing on. That is Ekiti, Osun, and Oyo State.
Okay.
Basically, I work more in Osun State.
Okay.
But I've also visited about I think more than 5 local governments in each of the other states. Okay. While in a few states, they have gone to more than 15, 20 local governments to talk about female genital mutilation. So there are some of the local governments or community that are willing to abandon FGM.
Okay.
You don't need to do
too much talking
and advocacy. Immediately they see the consequences and also see the impact on the life of girls and women, they also retrace their step and feel, okay, this that they are doing to the girl child is bad. Why some communities still feel it is what they should do? It is our tradition. It is part of us. And the mindset of the girls and women has also been coming towards that direction, to let them believe that this is, every girl must go through this. Every woman must have that experience. Mm-hmm. So it has been there. So the women tend to advise, also instill that into their daughters and let them know that when they also give birth, they must mutilate their children. So all together, we have had good news.
Mm.
Because before we started, there wasn't any state or any local government in this 3 states that have come out to publicly declare that they have abandoned
FGM.
Mm. I'm not saying most of those community or local government that say they have publicly declared abandonment. I'm not saying it's no more going in there, but it is not what you can just boldly come out publicly and say you want to mutilate a girl. So it has been a great work for us. But why we still have some community, some local government that we are not even focusing on, that the partners and the NGO that are working to end FGM in Nigeria are not really looking at, and that we discover that yes, most of them still believe that FGM is what they must do. For instance, Oshogbo, now we are not focusing on Oshogbo because Oshogbo is the state capital in Osun State.
So it looks like a town for literates.
We just go to Olarua, go to the rural local governments, Ife, South, all those places, and we forgot that it's most likely that we have more people that have been mutilated here in Oshogbo, local government, and along that. So that has made the work somehow not to a bit difficult, because you must also do thorough identification. You can't,
for setting out.
Yes, you can't determine that this is where they are doing more of the mutilation until you get there. But there are some places that we haven't got into, that
they're
the children are being mutilated every day. And this is why I'm saying it has not been easy, because it's worrisome when you get information where you're thinking that things like this will not happen, and they called you that 2 girls has just been mutilated, and the parents said this is what they came to do from Lagos, and they are back. So you can't even find the children that were mutilated. You can't even find anybody. So this is why I said that has not been easy as well.
Okay, so you said some communities, they see the effects and the consequences of female genital mutilation, and then they decide, no, we're not doing this again. Can you briefly talk about some of the effects and consequences of FGM as it is? Can you talk about some of the effects that women and girls who have been caught get to experience as survivors of the practice?
Okay, let me just tell you about the one that I saw. This is not
that you physically experienced.
Yes, that I experienced, that I have to have interaction with the person with the people involved.
Okay.
Not just what I know or what I read. I used to have a family that were very close, that the wife was mutilated. And then for about 7 years of marriage, it was like the husband, we need to rape the wife.
Wow.
Because it's a forceful
penetration.
And the wife doesn't give consent. So they had 2 kids. And these kids were like, the husband said it was as if she forced herself
to get pregnant
before she can have sex with the wife, before the wife could get pregnant. So that he can count the number of times that he has sex with the wife for that
as married couples.
A couple. And when we had interaction with the wife said it has not been easy. So that is why whenever she's going to bed in the night, she have to put on different things, put on jeans, put on tights, a lot of things. And whenever the husband comes, they will have to fight it out. So when the husband is tired, the husband will leave her alone. And virtually, the man couldn't hold it. And they separated. Now, look at the long-term effect. The parent that mutilated the woman, maybe the father or the mother is no more. So, what do you
now
say?
Now, she has to face the consequences on her own.
She has to face it on her own. So, the parent doesn't even want to wear anymore. But they mutilated her because they want to take care of her. They want her to live a good life. But at the long run, it was just ignorance that affected. So, there are a lot of effects of FGM, like obstructed labor. You find women that couldn't
deliver children by themselves.
And you find some who have what we call urine retention,
blood retention,
a lot that come up. And you know, I told someone that the women folks, they are the strongest among these both men and women, because they tend to keep pains in their body. But men will just come and say, whoa, this is paining me. But women will have to
The culture of
endure.
Silence.
Yes.
That's what we're trying to break.
Yes, they have been, the society has made them to be enduring pain. They couldn't speak out. So this is really affecting us, and it's affecting everybody, not just the woman that has been mutilated alone. It's affecting
definitely
everybody.
It gets to affect the husband, the boyfriend,
the family, everybody,
even the children, because
yes,
if a mother is not fine, there's no way she'll be able to attend to her children
definitely
very well. Okay, thank you. So let's look at it this way. You've been advocating against FGM for 5-6 years. In the course of 6 years, would you say there has been an incident or an event that has happened that has made you proud of your efforts as a campaigner against FGM? Probably someone walked up to you and told you, thank you for saying this. This is what I've experienced and I'm not doing this again. Or probably, let's say, anything at all that you think has happened in the course of 6 years. And then you look back and you'll be like, oh, I'm glad I came on this journey. I'm glad I decided to start advocating against this practice. I'm glad I could speak up against this. Because as a guy, as a man, it's actually not easy talking about female issues. But then could you share if there's any experience that's made you proud of your efforts as an advocate against FGM?
Okay, there are a lot to share.
Awesome.
But let me just pick one that is very recent.
Okay.
There is a community here in Osun State that we were about 5 months ago.
Okay.
After the dialogue, we had a community dialogue with the community. We have a lot of stakeholders there. So after the dialogue, and there was time for a question, an elderly woman stood up and said, this thing that you just said, I also just realized that I've been going through this pain that you mentioned. And I'm telling you today that my children, my son's children, that's our grandchildren, two girls, were brought to the community from Lagos immediately after the lockdown to be mutilated.
Wow, and that was last year.
Yes, and she said they are at home. But now that she also understands the pains that she's keeping in her body, she will not allow this girl to go through this same thing. So I'm going to call their parents and tell their parents that we are no more mutilating them. And that was how the life of those
two young girls
were saved. And we did follow up. And the woman said, not just our children alone, but every other children
young
that
children
you can have access
now,
to. She will make sure that their parents did not mutilate them. And if they want to do that forcefully, she will report them to the community leaders to make sure they stop them from mutilating them. So that gave me joy that day, that, okay, somebody could remember or could see that she's also passing through a pain that she kept in her body for years. And she's not mentioning
she's not even
it.
Telling anybody.
So after our work, she could come out and say, this pain that you just mentioned, this thing that you said will happen, this long-term effect is affecting me as I'm talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also planning to do that to my grandchildren. And I know they will also be going through that pain in the
later
next,
in life.
Yeah. So for this fact, I will make sure that they are not mutilated, and I will call their parents that we are not mutilating these children again. And I will also tell everybody around me that mutilation must be stopped in this community. So it's a big thing for me.
Mm. So that goes on to tell us that advocating for AGM gives a ripple effect, a chain effect. If you tell one person, another person will tell one person.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, we'll be able to achieve the end of FGM in our generation. Okay, let's look at it again this way. Have you experienced any form of backlash? Because really, FGM is a practice that is traditional, it's cultural, something is religious. Have you had any cause to actually have a kind of a physical, how do I say it? Have you experienced backlash? Like somebody telling you to your face that whatever it is you are doing is rubbish, you have to stop it, you have to go back to your house, you are a man, why are you fighting for women, why are you advocating for women? Have you experienced any form of backlash during your efforts and campaigns as an advocate?
Yes, when we just started.
Okay.
And that was in 2016.
Okay.
Then this campaign hasn't gone far.
The awareness was still very low.
It was still very low. So there is one of the local governments in Osun State here. When we got there, so I was introduced to the community leader. That's the team lead for the group that went there. And the community leader asked me a lot of questions. And he said I should call my mom if she was not mutilated. So she asked me where I came from where my community. I told him everything. He said I should call my mom if he was not mutilated. That is because my mom was mutilated.
That's why
I could stand here. That if my mom wasn't mutilated, maybe she would not be able to give birth to me.
Wow.
And I wouldn't be staying here.
Wow.
So he told me that I said my mom wasn't mutilated, that my mom is also an advocate, that immediately I start doing this, I let my mom to see it, and my mom said yes, she knows people that were mutilated and she will also make sure that she talked to them, to everybody around that, to make sure that they didn't mutilate their children. So we had this argument, and we left that day. We went back there after a few weeks. We were able to, through somebody else that could help us talk to them, understand the community language, the traditional leader's language, and the person that facilitated that process. We were able to do our program, though the man did not accept that it should stop, but we did our program. But about 2 years after, she got the message correctly and felt, okay, now she can see that this is what is happening. Let me also join this advocacy. These guys were right. And for the women that are coming out to tell them that this is what
we
are facing, to tell their story. So their wives in the palaces were also saying, we are also passing through this, though we are not talking
to anyone.
And from there, you could now say, okay, really, you guys were right.
Okay, thank you very much. So, in conclusion, do you have any advice for parents, grandparents? Because over time, we've heard that even when parents don't want to do this on their children, grandparents are always very strong on it. Like, no, we have to do it. It's a tradition. So, do you have any advice for parents, for survivors, for fellow advocates who are also working to end the practice of FGM? Any advice for them?
Okay, for parents. Parent, I will tell the parent that their children is their responsibility. It is not the responsibility of their grandparents or whosoever. It's their responsibility. So they should be assertive and make sure that they take decision that will help the child in the future or help their children. So, and the grandparent, that they should allow their children to take care of their own children. They should allow them to take responsibility for their children, and they shouldn't push them into wrong things. And I will also tell them that there is law, and the law doesn't know who you are, especially when it comes to the life of a child.
Mm-hmm.
So to protect that child, it is the responsibility of everybody, including government. So I know government will take every step to protect the child from either the parent or grandparent. So that is what I would tell them. And for advocates, I would tell us that, especially for the one that has just joined me, that the road to advocate freely to help a child is very rough. It's difficult. You may want to give up that. Am I not rendering this for free? And these people are still trying to fight me. So you will find a lot of things like that. So, but let us push, because that child that you're helping today will turn back to be the one that will save your life tomorrow. So this is very important.
Okay, so for survivors who are actually coping with different effects and consequences, what encouragement would you give them?
Okay, for a survivor, before you could say this person is a survivor, that means the person has been speaking out, has been saying a lot of things. So I will first say kudos to them for people that are called some help. So I will ask every other person to also join and speak out. So I will also say, please, let's ask more questions. Let's talk to who is supposed to talk to a survivor. Let's tell them whatever we're going through. And let's also assist other people that we find in that same situation that couldn't, that is so difficult for them. Let's help them. We are the only one that can help them, because we understand the language better,
like.
So we can speak to them. So, and they should join the team of activists that are trying to make sure that FGM is completely abandoned in our society.
Thank you very much for joining us on this episode of FGM Stories, Mr. Ademola Adebisi.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so to share your stories, you can reach us on email via fgmstories.ng@gmail.com, or you can send a DM on Twitter at FGM Stories. I remain Oluwatosin Olarewaju. I'll catch you on the next episode. Thank you.
Coming home from work, to parents and their children going to church, a happy little